Blog Talk Radio.
From the Boomer and the Babe studio at the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's time for Exploring Faith with John Mayer and Pete Peters. Join them as they explore the role of faith in today's world. How does it play a role in business, politics, lifestyles, families, and individuals? Now here are John Mayer and Pete Peters with today's guest.
Yes, here we are. It is Exploring Faith. This is Pete Peters. And we are broadcasting live, as that announcer voice said, from the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona. John Mayer is the co-host, and he's here with me today. And our guest today is Mr. David McGrew, and we're going to talk a little bit to David McGrew here very shortly. But before we get into that, it is Wednesday, September 7th, 2011, and we want to let you know exactly what the Boomer and the Babe is all about. So we invite you to go to the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated website, which is www.boomerandthebabe.com. See what we're involved in addition to this radio program, which is publishing mini books, publishing e-books. Our book authors all have their own shows here on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk, and we invite you to listen to those as well. We produce videos, promotional products, and consult for small businesses. We truly are a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company. You can contact us on our website, as I said, at www.boomerandthebabe.com, boomerandthebabe.com. I said I'm Pete Peters. And with me is
John Mayer.
John Mayer is here. John Mayer is the pastor from the Prince of Peace Episcopal Church in Peoria, Arizona. And our guest today is Mr. Dave McGrew. Dave McGrew is the owner of the local Chick-fil-A in Surprise, Arizona. Chick-fil-A is a well-known to be a Christian-based business in the sense that they are faith-based operators, almost all of them, I think, across the country, if that's pretty much the case. For one thing, I don't know if everybody's aware of it, but Chick-fil-A never opens on Sunday, as witness to their faith and the way they operate and run their business. They also do the Chick-fil-A golf tournament in Atlanta, Georgia, and I believe in that golf tournament they closed down all the Chick-fil-A stands on Sunday, missing a tremendous opportunity to make a lot of money on a Sunday at a golf tournament, a major PGA golf tournament, and they closed down the food stands, the Chick-fil-A stands on Sunday. So they talk the talk and they walk the walk, as they say. So at any rate, Dave's got a long history, and he's got 36 items on his bio, so I'm not going to read it because we won't have enough time to do the rest of the conversation. But Dave, welcome to Exploring Faith with the Boomer and the Babe, if she were here, but with Pete and John. And if Deborah were here, you know Deborah as well.
Absolutely.
So if she would ask you for your two-minute movie, so give us 2 minutes of what Dave McGrew is all about prior to Chick-fil-A when I met you. Where do you hail from, as they say?
Yep, that's a great question, Pete. Good day. Nice to be here. Thank you, John. Appreciate it very much.
Absolutely, Dave.
Yeah, I'm originally here from Glendale, Arizona. I grew up here, went to high school here at Glendale High School, and right after that, I was going to go play baseball at Grand Canyon University, which then was a two-year college. Decided at the last minute to go join the U.S. Air Force and travel the world, which I did, spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and came back, met my wife Kathy, got married, and shortly after that we moved to Fort Worth, Texas, where we lived for almost 20 years, then moved back here to open up a Chick-fil-A franchise. I was in telecommunications when I was back in Texas. And starting the Chick-fil-A franchise here, part of Chick-fil-A, and we'll get into this a little later, I imagine, part of Chick-fil-A is also into ministerial work. We do a lot of ministries, overseas ministries, and every single aspect. And part of what I do is I also am a lead with Chick-fil-A Serve, which is a part of one of their WinShape organizations. And basically, we go overseas and teach Christ's leadership to businessmen and women overseas. And my specialty is the Middle East. Being stationed there some odd years ago, we go back to the Middle East and we witness to them through Christ's leadership.
Very good.
Yeah.
And you've had your Chick-fil-A franchise how long now? How long ago did I meet you?
Oh, goodness, Pete, I think we met December 2003.
Sounds about right, yeah.
A little over 8 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, we had just moved here from San Diego, I think, and at the same time you were opening your restaurant over there.
We did, yeah, right. And I think we also sat on the chamber board together at that time.
I think there was a little of that went on,
yeah,
too.
I remember those days.
So do I. Trust me. And you continued with that type of work in the community, and I've gotten out of it.
Oh.
Well, we won't go into that. But why don't we kind of get out with our discussion? We wanted to discuss a little bit today about a Christian way of doing business, what's involved in that, how that plays out in the community, and so on. So, John, I'll let you kind of take it from there.
Sure. Great. Thank you, Pete. Yeah, Dave, it's great to – always great to be together. Look forward every time you and I could be together. And one thing we didn't mention, Pete, was that Dave and I actually met through Leadership West. And he had already been through and was, I've forgotten when you and I met what you were doing with Leadership West, but it was at the retreat, the opening retreat there in Prescott one night. There you were. And we hit it off real well that time.
And your eyes met across the room.
Nothing like that. No. First of all, there was no room.
Right.
Pine trees. Nothing but pine
right.
trees.
Right.
That's fine.
I digress.
Right. And just, and that shared experience from Leadership West, you know, wonderful program. It was really helpful to me when I first moved here in 2005. I'm wondering if you would make a general kind of observation, because you grew up here, were out for a while, and then moved back. Do you see any kind of changes, or what are the changes that you see generally in the Phoenix area, in the culture and community, and also in the church?
Yeah, that's a great question, John. You know, I've wondered that quite a bit for the last 8 years since we've been back here, and there's a drastic change, an immense change in the way I look at Phoenix. And let me qualify that statement. When we lived here, we went to church, but you know, I wouldn't say I was saved at that point. We went to church as a family, and so did my wife's family. And then moving to Texas after the Air Force, we started going to some of the local churches there, neighbors. And there, the first thing somebody meets you, what they say is, where do you go to church? And so we were invited constantly to go to different churches. And we found a nice church home for 8 years. And going there, I wanted to learn more. I was hungry. I gave my life to the Lord when we were there. I was hungry, went to seminary when I was there. I went to Dallas Baptist University, a nice Southern Baptist university. And what I mean by that is it kind of blew me away, some of our classes. I've got a business degree in information systems, and some of the classes we would have, the professor would start the class with prayer. And how often do you see that? And so I was just amazed, and I wanted to learn more. And you know, spiritual hunger is a lot different than our physical hunger. The more you eat, the more you feed, the more you want. Physical hunger, the more you feed, you got to push back at some point. Not so. So that's when I went to a seminary there in the Dallas area. And long story short, we moved out here. Now, you ask me, what change do we see? I've wondered that for so long, John, because I don't know if I've changed so radically or Phoenix has changed so radically. And I think it's a combination of both, actually.
Yeah.
You know, before you had a huge influx of one type of person from a certain part of the country, and now you have a different. So Phoenix is a pretty large melting pot for the United States, I believe. And with that, so many diverse backgrounds here. And we were mentioning earlier that maybe the culture here in Phoenix isn't as solid as it would be, say, in Atlanta, Georgia, or you know, Chicago, for that matter. But the change that I've seen, I'd like to think a lot of it is in me.
Yeah.
Just because I'm not the person, if you talk to somebody that I went to high school with, I'm not that person anymore.
By the way, is there a list of those people for future guests?
yes, they are. Yes, there is. I'm Facebook friends with them right now. Matter of fact, I was witnessing to them this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Even throwing some scripture out there at them. But, yeah, you know, the change is great. You know, there's a lot of positive changes here in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of strong leadership. We were talking about leadership a little earlier before the broadcast.
Right.
And I do think there's a lot of strong leadership here in the Phoenix area and also in Arizona. And so I see that really driving Phoenix forward. Leadership West, the organization we're part of, is, I think, a great example of that. And so I think there's a lot of positive change. Also, I think there's a little change that, you know, I don't know if you want to say negative, but I think there's also a little bit of change that has moved away from a compassionate city, moved away from a caring city about neighbors. And we still have that, but you know what I'm talking about, the recipe of what makes just a good, wonderful community. And
let me ask, do you think that that has something to do with the political posture and the political situation we find ourselves in?
Yeah, let me back up a little bit on that one, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Absolutely, yes. The answer would be yes. But I think before we can get to that point about the politics, I think it's a basic element of morality. What morals do you hold to? What's your worldview? What do you believe in? And based on what you believe in is going to be your position. And so I think that's why we have the polarization, and not just Phoenix, but also in this country.
Mm-hmm. We could speak on that forever.
Yeah, we could.
As some do. Yes.
As some do, yes.
So, John, sum up your question, the change. Yeah, I see a lot of change, but I know a lot of that's in me as well.
Sure.
Thank the Lord.
Absolutely. Great observation. How about in the church itself? I mean, I understand your relationship and activity and commitment in the church is different now. But do you think the church in the Phoenix area has changed in any way over these, say, 20, 25 years?
Yeah, I'm sure it has. I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that. When I was here living before, being a young man, not involved so much in church, and if I was, it was just going and playing the game, right, sitting in the pews and saying or doing whatever I needed to do, and I was out of there faster than anything.
Right.
And moving back and really holding on to the Lord in the Dallas area, and driving that stake in the ground and committing my life. I'm not perfect. I'm forgiven. That's one thing I want to tell everybody. But moving back here, I know a lot of great churches here in the Phoenix area, a lot of wonderful churches that are doing some amazing things.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Hey, let me focus a little bit now just on business, where you've spent an awful lot of time and energy and the way that goes for you, a lot of the economy of this area is in the service economy, and that's part of what you're in now. That's deeply affected by the recession, perhaps more so than other kinds of economic foundations. So one of the things I'm wondering is this. Have you found that many people would think, well, Chick-fil-A, it's a Christian kind of place, the economy is down, so therefore they should be doing more than what they're doing? In other words, how do you find, as a Christian, the community looks at you and expects things from you? How does that work from where you stand?
Yeah, another great question. You know, let me answer that by backing up again. Sorry to be backing up on these, but, you know, there's a lot of weight. There's a lot of depth to these questions. You know, how does the community look at me, and do they think I should be doing more? Well, again, it's a matter of perspective. What are they expecting from Chick-fil-A? We are retail. We are in business. You know, Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, was asked in a seminar just 2-3 years ago, and he's still alive and kicking, 90 years old, very actively involved in the Chick-fil-A corporate office, goes to work every single day. He was asked at a Southern Baptist-type seminar convention. He was asked, what is the most important aspect of Chick-fil-A? What's the most important thing to him? Do you know what he said, Pete?
I don't know.
John?
No, I don't know either.
Making a profit. That blew everybody away. They thought, oh, my goodness, this Christian-based company, their number one goal is to make a profit. But if you think about it, You don't make a profit, none of it works. Nothing works. It all falls apart. Now, how much of a profit and everything else, that's a whole different issue. Now, we know, and I'll answer your question, but we know Truett Cathy is such a godly man. He gives away millions and millions upon tens of millions of dollars each year through all sorts of different ministries, philanthropic efforts, and everything else. Now, coming back, how does the community see me? Well, we like to consider ourselves a community partner, that we just happen to sell chicken on the side in order to fund our people business. And I'm very, very serious about being in the people business. And that's another joke we say, you know, we got out of the chicken business a long time ago. We're in the people business. And I truly mean that. And whatever you might mean by that is not just with the people we hire. We might interview 10, 12, 15 people before we hire one, sometimes even 50. We try not to go that deep, but we're trying to hire the right people. Think of a sports team. Mm-hmm. Just because, John, you might look good in an Arizona Cardinals uniform doesn't mean you're going to be the next quarterback, right? Right. You got to have that skill. You got to have that ability. And so that's what we're looking for. If we hire somebody, we're looking for character. And so once we hire the right people on board, then we take them to a whole nother level. We teach them so many things about life. You know, it's not just get in there and do your job. Our job is to take them to a whole nother playing level because we know we're a stepping stone. And once they leave our business, and they will, whether they're going to college or going off to somewhere else, once they leave us, we want them to go conquer the world.
Right.
We want them to truly have an impact in the world, what they're doing. And so we take them and we see their time with us as a awesome, awesome training time to work with them, teach them leadership, Christ servant leadership. And I mentioned serve, S-E-R-V-E. That's an acrostic that we use.
Oh, right.
And that's, real quickly, it stands for see and shape the future, engage and develop people, reinvent continuously, value the results and the people. A lot of times they say, you know, corporations are, they value the profit or they value the people. But we say you can do both. And that's what Truett Cathy was talking about. And, of course, the last E is value the people. What is that last E? You know, I've never gotten to that last E. We're working on it.
Exercise your memory.
Exercise your memory. Embody the values.
Embody the values. Yeah.
What values do you hold to in your business? And ours, we are, I wouldn't say we're a Christian business. Matter of fact, we know that Christ's blood wasn't shed for any P&L statement. It was shed for your soul and mine. But what we do say is we are godly men and women that hold to godly principles. We believe in Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. And now let me back that up. You don't have to be a Christian to own a Chick-fil-A franchise. There are several non-Christians that have a Chick-fil-A franchise. But we still hold to godly principles. Don't steal, right? Some of those Ten Commandments are thrown in there. Forget the other 603. Anyway, so coming back to about, I'll get to you a second, Pete, sorry. So coming back to how does the community see me? Well, we're a community partner. We're actively involved. Our team members are volunteers in so many different organizations. If someone calls us and needs help, if there's an accident or some family has issues, we donate food to the family. We do a lot of this below radar so people don't know what we're doing because we don't want to toot our horn and say, look at us, what we're doing. And so a lot of the things that we do are not seen by the public, but those that really know who we are understand what we're doing. We donate food to the high schools. This year, matter of fact, we decided the rest of this year we're feeding all the high school football teams. All the ones that wanted food, we're giving them sandwiches or home games or away games.
Yeah, that's great. Let me ask you this. The community, as you deal with the community on a daily basis,
yes.
Does the community come to Chick-fil-A because they like the chicken? Or does the community come to Chick-fil-A because they know of your mission? And what kind of a split do you think you have there?
Yeah, I wouldn't know, Pete, but if I would write a question for you to ask me, that would be the question to ask.
Way to go, Pete.
Yeah, here's what we want to do. We want to create raving fans. This is why Chick-fil-A does not have a 99-cent or a dollar menu. We don't do that. Because once you start bringing your product down to a lesser value, a cheap value, now you're a commodity. What happens if the restaurant or the business down the street has an 89-cent or a 55-cent product? Well, the fan base or the customer base that you're going to acquire by having a cheaper product, they're coming there because you've got a less expensive commodity. that they're just going to buy. They don't care about anything. So what we try to do is create raving fans, and we do that by having a clean restaurant, by having good quality food, and we're adamant about our products being just perfectly meeting quality standards and exceeding them. And also, the last one, it's probably the most important to us, is our customer service. We want to treat you with so much dignity, so much respect, so much care when you come into our store, into our restaurant, that you're going to say, wow, I've never seen a bunch of teenagers treat people with respect and everything else. Yeah, go ahead.
I've got to admit that when the first time I went into a Chick-fil-A, and I don't know that it was your Chick-fil-A, but any Chick-fil-A I've gone into, it's been my pleasure to serve you. Thank
yes.
you very much.
Right.
I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and they're just gushing. And I go, my word, what is going on here? What the heck did I do? You know, but they do. I mean, they just, they gush all over you. It's always please and thank you. I mean, it's just never missed by any person, any young person that I've ever encountered at any Chick-fil-A. It's really commendable because people aren't used to that kind of stuff.
No, they're not. And you know, you can't fake that.
No.
You can't fake that. And that's where it comes back to, you have to hire the right people. I think it was Jim Collins that wrote the book Good to Great, right? And he basically said you got to get the right people on the bus, then get them in the right seat. And so that's what we're doing. We're trying to find the right people. But that customer service is not just regular customer service. We even break that down into three areas. And not to dump a lot of logistics on you, but first of all, we have to be operationally perfect. We've got to have our skills down. We've got to do all the basics perfectly. The second step is the second mile service. You know, that's a Christian principle.
Right.
Christ said when you're asked to carry a load a mile, go the second mile. And we truly believe in that. We're going to go the extra mile. We're going to provide that service in our store that you won't see any just about anywhere else. And our third step is emotional connections. So now what we're doing is we're treating the customers to special events, special opportunities that we have in our store that create that emotional connection with us. And what I mean by that, we have a daddy-daughter date night. Oh, my goodness. We have a full-service restaurant at that point. Our side of our restaurant, we have full service. You come in to the host or hostess, and they have you seated at a table with tablecloth and, you know, the imitation candles, and there's roses on there. And we have the wait staff come over and take your order, and it's wonderful. And it creates such an emotional connection. And so what we're doing is we're pouring our heart out into our customers and into the community by servicing them in our store.
Well, I remember when I, as I said earlier, I first met you when you opened the store. I remember the emphasis that you and your wife were putting on service, training. They had to pour exactly the right amount of soft drink. They had to have exactly the two crucial pickles had to be on there.
Yes.
And there was not an item that was skipped or shortchanged in any way, shape, or form. And I'm sure that some of those kids, they didn't get it, and they had to move on. But the ones you had at that time, and I'm sure it's still the same, are just unbelievable. I mean, they are, even when they come by and help clean up the tables, and they're phenomenal.
Right.
I mean, and for a quote, fast food operation,
right,
you just don't see that anywhere else.
Well, I went to the drive-thru last Thursday, and that was my experience. Yeah.
You know, we don't consider ourselves a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
My mistake.
Service. No, you're right. We're in that category, absolutely. But we consider ourselves a multi-million dollar a year business that fails or succeeds based on our ability to please our customers, to create a growing customer base, and just do those fundamentals right.
Mm-hmm.
I would take any of my managers and most of my teenagers and put them up against any leadership in just about any store, any business, anywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, we are – my leadership's job, about 60% of their job is coaching and developing, coaching and developing, coaching and developing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's real simple, actually. You just got to find the right people.
And
then it's basic fundamentals after that.
Right. Yeah, then it works. Yeah. Hey, let me shift a little bit just to see your perspective about this, you know, because just so well-run and excellent company. But to broaden it out with the Christian principles, and we talked a little about this before we put on the microphones today, but I brought along this book, House, Church, and Mission, and by Roger Gehrig, who is teaching at George Fox University there in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Wonderful place. My sister-in-law teaches there, by the way.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, in the family
council. Do you know this author?
I don't know this author, and for the sales of this book, my family gets no kickbacks. But
you're not getting a residual here?
nothing. Just the sheer joy of sharing knowledge.
There you go.
That's right.
There you go.
Gary quotes someone here in his book saying that the ancient oikos, which is the household in the New Testament, is not just one social and economic form among others, but rather the basic social and economic form, not only for the ancient world and the New Testament, but presumably for every pre-industrial sedentary culture as well. And the implication of that is that a household in the New Testament was a business, like Lydia that we see in Philippi, who met Paul, the gospel was first received in her household. First time the gospel was received in Europe was in her household. And her household was not only a place for people to live and grow and so forth, but a business. It was her business, as many households were. And part of the contention of Gehrig in his book here, House, Church, and Mission, is that the faith was extended business to business. So what I'm wondering is, how you view that? Is there a way that you practice that? The New Testament is very multicultural, multi-religious in that culture, as we are becoming more and more today.
Right.
How does that work for you, if it does?
Yeah. It's a matter of perspective. Number one, and number two. Do you remember what when the apostles asked Christ what the most important principle rule is?
He didn't say prophet, did he?
No. He said to love God.
That's right.
What was number two?
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah, love your neighbor. Right. You know, and what we always say is, you know, if God went through the trouble of creating this whole universe, creating this planet and setting up a perfect atmosphere and growing living things that sustain our life and came in the form of Jesus Christ to die for us, then we're pretty important to him. That if he went through all that effort. So if we're important to God, then others ought to be important to us. So that's one thing we keep into perspective. But really another element of that, and a huge element, is basically our corporate purpose. And that states that we are to be faithful stewards of everything that's entrusted to us and to have a positive impact of all those we come in contact with. And so if you take that first half of that statement, We are to be faithful stewards of everything that's entrusted to us. That right there sets the tone for everything else.
Right.
I'm not really the owner of that Chick-fil-A down there. God is. He lets me run it.
Yeah.
You know, and I see us as plug and play. He's got me plugged in as a Chick-fil-A franchise owner and operator right now. You know, next year, 2 months, a week down the line, he could pull me out and have me doing something else, and that's where we plug and play. We dance to his tune. And so with that perspective, I'm a steward of it, and that's the parable of the talents in the New Testament, that he's given something to us. What are we doing with it? Are we just sitting down with it, or are we helping to grow and build that? And so that actually validates Truett Cathy's statement, to make a profit, we have to make a profit.
Right.
But coming back to that, yes, the perspective of we're stewards. We don't own it. God's just got it on loan to us, and to love people.
Right. Yeah.
Did that kind of answer that? Or not?
Sure, yeah.
So is it safe to say that the belief structure is basically that everything you have is on loan? Your health is on loan.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Your relationships are on loan.
Absolutely.
Everything is on loan.
Absolutely. You know, and do we abuse that at times? Absolutely. All right? Do we come in line and walk the walk or walk the talk? Yes, you know, but we're human beings. We're prone to failure at times, but that's where Christ's forgiveness is just an amazing aspect of grace.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's in the New Testament, occasionally we're encouraged to walk worthy of the gospel, or walk
yes.
worthy of the calling.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people, and I believe a lot of Christians, who would say, that means I got to fly right. And if I don't fly right, God's going to be mad at me. And I think it's just completely something other than that. Much of what David was just describing, in that you do the right thing to love others, you do the right thing to show that you're entrusted with something by God because of the great love he has for you, because of the grace that he's given to you, which you didn't work your way in, so you can't work your way out. You just, out of the gratitude and the desire to really reflect what you've been given, you live that way. It's powerful.
Yeah, you know, let me parallel something.
Yeah.
Here. We were talking a little earlier about my team members coming in, and Pete, you'd mentioned just how overflowing they were with just that servant's heart of removing the tray of trash off your table. We even change our language. We don't say, can I get your refill? May I refresh your beverage? And a few other things. So, and I mentioned you can't fake that, because you could tell right off the bat when it's fake. If someone really doesn't want to serve you or help you, you could tell it's fake. That's why it's so important that we personally select the right people to come work for us. Now, parallel that to a Christian and their walk. If you try to obey rules and laws and regulations, you become very religious. You know, don't do this, don't do that. That's a crazy, insane life to live.
Yeah.
And you can't do it. You can't do it. You just can't do it. But if you have that true and loving personal relationship
yeah.
that's coming from the heart, then it just flows naturally. I believe it does. Well, naturally. Because it's been ingrained into us supernaturally.
Supernaturally, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, if I could fulfill a list of rules, I don't need Jesus. I can do the list of rules by myself, even if it's hard. And what the calling is to enter into a life where if I'm not resting on him, living by faith, I absolutely cannot do it. Cannot do it.
Dave, in your day-to-day activities, as the Chick-fil-A owner, franchise holder, whatever the term is, do you find that things have that your way of doing business, you're following the tenets of the organization and your own personal tenets and your relationship with the Almighty and so on, do you find that that's just now falls into place, or do you ever have to catch yourself?
Oh, I catch myself all the time. I think John could probably relate to that very well. Yeah.
Deeply.
Yeah, I get mad. Absolutely. I get mad when people are trying to rip me off, which happens all the time. Yeah, no, it's frustrating day in and day out trying to run a business. And even though we select the right team members, we still have issues with our – I employ about 42 people, and so we still have issues with someone wanting to go to a high school football game instead of come to work that night. And it's a frustrating life at times being an entrepreneur and being a business owner and being so actively involved and truly just giving everything you've got to your team and to the people and to be walked on at times. Yeah, that's frustrating. That's heartbreaking. But, you know, that's when you got to keep your focus. Okay, why am I here? Plug and play. God's got me here doing this for a very particular reason. Who am I supposed to reach? Who am I supposed to teach and grow and develop? But also, hey, I think the abuse and punishment I take from somebody that's trying to get an extra sandwich from me is anything. No, you know, look what Christ suffered and was harassed and punished and beaten for. Yeah, so my issues are nothing.
On the grand scheme of things, that sandwich isn't that big a deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When you're out in the community and you're dealing with other business leaders in the community, some of them have your belief structure. Others don't have your belief structure. Some have no belief structure whatsoever.
Right.
How do you interact with those people? What is the thing at play? What's at play there? How do you get through that so that you can relate to everybody for the common good of the community and the business community?
Yeah, I actually, it's very easy. I love people. I mean, I truly love people. Doesn't mean they don't make me mad sometimes, but I truly love people. I was in Venice Beach this weekend, and boy, that is very bizarre. But I loved it. I just saw all the wide, diverse people. I don't see them as, oh, that's not a Christian, or this will get some people. Oh, that person's a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually love the Arab people, and that's why I go over to the Middle East on a regular basis, twice a year, to do my ministry. So anyway, coming back to it, you just love people, and you respect them for who they are. We are all at some point not perfected or not knowing, or we all lacked at some point. So it's giving grace, as Christ gave us grace, and loving on us unconditionally. And so that's what it is, just being supportive. Doesn't mean you have to agree with their tenets or their viewpoints, but give them respect and dignity for who they are. Because remember, Scripture tells us, and John, help me with the verse here. Scripture tells us that don't offend anybody, or don't pummel them, or don't beat them up verbally, because who knows if you'll be the infraction that keeps them from coming to Christ. And that's a paraphrase.
Yeah, sure. That's all over the place. But First Peter does it well. Always be ready to give the reason for the hope that was in you, but do it with gentleness and respect.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. But the biggest thing is, I don't want them to reject Christ because I'm marrying Christ and I did a pretty poor job of coming off to him like, hey, heathen, who do you think you are? You need to know the Lord. No, that's not it. It's Christ's love, and that's replete through the New Testament. Christ love, Christ loves, Christ love.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to the other question that I was asking, and I don't want to dwell a lot on politics, but I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on nowadays. That it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, I don't know, I don't know that much about being a good Christian, okay? But I know enough to know that to me doesn't sound like being a good Christian if it's the old my way or the highway approach. And I think that's permeating too much of everything that's going on locally, nationally, regionally, as regards our political structure. I don't know what can be done about that.
Well, you know, when you consider politics, politics is all about negotiation and compromise.
Point blank. I would hope so.
Point blank. It's negotiation and compromise. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I do believe we're back. I don't know where we lost that signal all of a sudden, but it disappeared on us. Maybe it was a message from somebody that they didn't like what I asked.
I don't know who that would be.
I don't either. At any rate, we're back on and continuing with the conversation. Let's see if we can resurrect where we were. What we were talking about. You were talking, Dave.
Did you use resurrect on purpose?
Yes.
Absolutely. I was mentioning that there are certain beliefs, certain tenets that we hold to that are non-negotiable. You know, the quality of food. We have guidelines from the Maricopa County Environmental Services Department that state that we have to treat our food in certain ways. So absolutely, there's guidelines that we have. There's principles that we hold to that are non-negotiable, that if you violate those, you will be terminated from employment. You know, some of those are harassment of any kind, theft. And so we all have certain tenets that we hold to that are non-negotiable. But really, life is all about loving others, respecting others, and working within those bounds of compromise.
Yeah. So when it involves the things that you're involved in the community, you get yourself involved in some quasi-political situations, shall we say, based on your bio. Do you ever get yourself how much negotiation do you get into, and how does that play into your belief structure, your company's belief structure?
I think we got cut off again.
No. I see that it's live.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so, this day is just loaded, isn't it, this morning already? Okay. Well, as you know, that there was a mass push, I guess it was 4 years ago or so, to have me run for the mayor of Surprise.
Yes, I do know that.
And I seriously thought about it. But after a while, I thought, no, I'm not going to run for mayor. Just not going to do it. I would have loved to have gotten in there and been the mayor of Surprise. I thought I could provide some solid leadership that would move the city forward during tough and difficult times by keeping a focus on those things that are important to the city of Surprise. At the last minute, I decided not to. My good friend Lynn Truitt ran for mayor and won by a landslide. Anyway, so coming back to that, I try to stay out of politics as much as possible nowadays, over the last 2 to 3 years. The Lord led me to believe that even though in my times past I was very, very political, I was, I guess, a precinct chairman back in Texas and a lot of other things that we were involved with, and very actively involved in different committees and boards in Texas, and even here sitting on a few ad hoc committees. Two, 3 years ago, the Lord impressed upon me that, you know, what's my vision? What's my focus? That I could be involved in politics, but who is that really for? Was it for me, or was it truly for the betterment of the gospel, for the betterment of moving faith forward in this community? And we know that politics polarize people, absolutely, no ifs, ands, or buts. And so if I was in a polarizing position, yes, I might have a nice following or a fan base, but what about those others that I'm trying to reach with the gospel? Yeah, I would polarize them. And so 3 years ago, yeah, I decided I've got to get out. Plus the corporate office told me a nice little principle about supporting politicians, that it does no good for the business. Because again, if you're trying to reach the whole community, if you're supporting one candidate over the other, then you're going to alienate your customer base.
50%. Yeah, that's what Deborah and I have talked about repeatedly.
Yeah.
Taking a political stance, saying whatever you're going to say, take a position, endorse, don't endorse, whatever the case might be, whatever you do, whether you wanted to endorse the right wing or the left wing, it doesn't matter. Whichever one you're not endorsing, you've lost,
right?
Conceivably.
Right.
And no matter how much people say, well, that's okay, you're entitled to your beliefs, when it comes right down, push comes to shove, chances are they're going to let that affect them. So you're much better off trying to coalesce the two sides and working together and have them working together if it's at all possible.
Yeah, I could see a business getting very involved in a political position or even a political candidate if the stakes are pretty high, pretty strong, for whatever reason, whatever that may be. Absolutely. If one policy or law coming up that people are voting on could be detrimental to businesses, yeah, I could see businesses getting involved and supporting the denial of that law or principle or whatever. So I could see that, absolutely. But something on this level, you know, voting for a city councilman, voting for a mayor, possibly not, because you are going to alienate half your community.
Right. Well, what you were talking about, those are generally handled by other organizations that you either support or you don't, like the Chambers of Commerce and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
And if the Chamber of Commerce is really a pro-business entity and they want what's best for the business community, well, then most businesses, in theory, most businesses should, or the majority of businesses should, I think, be willing to support that activity because it's on their behalf.
Right, right.
And that's a different situation completely.
Right.
Dave, it sounds to me, just from this few minutes of discussion here, that your heart, what you want to see, what you want your life to count for, is for the benefit of the whole community, the city to be able to rise to its next level or even beyond that, to become all that it was meant to be. Does that sound right?
It is.
That's you. Well, if you were to write a book that had the message that you wanted everyone to know, what might be the title and a one or two sentence synopsis of that book? Or a couple of paragraphs, if you will.
And I know somebody's going to publish it for
you. Oh, no, wait a minute. All right.
Wow, John, that's one that's a road I haven't really gone down to a certain extent. I love coaching and developing and training people to a whole new level of play. You know, whether that be work focus, that we're in the store, in the restaurant, and I'm training somebody, and I've got my managers, and really, I spend about 70 to 80% of my time with my leadership. I've got eight leaders. I've got eight leaders, and I've got 42 employees. So I spend 80% of my time with those eight people. And so it's always coaching. It's developing, training them, bringing them up to a higher level play. And it's the same thing in the community. We have Bible studies in our homes. We've had I've taught at little seminars that we've put on and held. I've been a guest speaker, guest teacher at a lot of the high schools. And the topics have varied, whether it's Christ-centered, whether it's business-centered, or whether it's community-centered. And there's all sorts of needs out there. And basically, it's changing lives, bringing everybody up to a higher level of play. That is my goal. That's passion. My passion. Actually, one of my ultimate goals is to create a Bible college out here in the Surprise area, out in the Northwest Valley. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. That's exciting. Yeah. That's great.
You end up being the dean of the Bible college, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not that good with the administration.
Yeah, that'd be a tough one.
Wow. That's a wonderful, wonderful vision. Gosh, that's good. Pete, think of a question while I soak that in, will you?
All right, you're talking about a Bible college.
Yeah.
Explain your vision of a Bible college. What is that?
Well, you know, that dynamic has changed so much over the last 10 years with the advent of the Internet and so many things. You don't necessarily nowadays need a brick-and-mortar building.
Right.
I mean, eventually you do at some point. But my thoughts and ideas were, I've got a good friend that has a ministry in Edmond, Oklahoma that I met in Texas when we lived in Texas together. And he's up there, and he has a ministry called the Credo House. And it's a building that they built, but a lot of it's online. They have DVDs that they sell, and basically they go through theology. They go through a lot of different elements of theology. They talk about the Bible, how we can know the Bible is true and reliable, and they go through that. And these guys are pretty much scholars, and most of them are out of Dallas Theological Seminary, but not all of them. Some of them are from elsewhere. But that is a nice little example for me of how this guy left Stonebriar Church in Texas and moved up to Oklahoma to be with his mother at that time. And she was going through some issues, and she is she's in a very difficult state right now. So he was up there with her. Anyway, he just started his ministry up there, teaching and coaching and developing. And there's other ministries like that. There's one called Downline Ministries that's in Memphis, Tennessee, I believe. That's a good model for me as well. So the genesis of moving forward with a Bible college would be some very basic theology elements. You know, is there a God? Can we prove without a doubt that there is a God? You know, then who's Jesus? And then the Bible? Yeah. And why do we need a Savior? And go through some basic elements of theology.
Yeah. That's great. Pete, I don't know if I shared this with you at some point along the line. I just don't remember. But one of the things I do, and I'm kicking it in right now for the fall, is I teach an online course at Palmer Seminary out of Philadelphia. And they have a school there called the Eastern School of Christian Ministry, aimed at people who are taking some leadership in their church but don't have a seminary degree. They're ready to do some more study, maybe get licensed in their denomination fellowship. And so for the past 3 years, I've been teaching New Testament. So I'm about to start Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah, study the Gospels, 6 weeks, all online. I never see them. I'll never see them. But they send a brief bio introduction.
Yeah.
Just incredible people who are ready to go to the next step and just dive into studying the Scriptures however they can, whatever it costs them to do it, time-wise and energy-wise, over those 6 weeks. And they communicate with each other over the blackboard online.
Yeah, love it. Yeah.
All that, yeah. Just some excellent stuff.
That's how I took some of my MBA classes, absolutely, online.
Yeah.
But eventually, that's the whole idea with the Bible college, and who knows where that goes. And, you know, there's an old saying, everything is possible if you don't mind who gets the credit. And so what I'm trying to do towards the last part of this year of 2011 is pull together a couple other like-minded leaders that would like to develop the principal of a Bible college, and who knows when that launches, but put together the material and have it available and have a website and have it available online, you know, whether it's free or whether there's a nominal fee for it to pay for the systems to operate it and everything else. So that's where I'm eventually going.
Nice.
And providing leadership, Christian leadership online too, because that's sorely lacking
right.
in businesses as well.
Right.
What's it mean to be a Christian and a leader?
Now, you mentioned something about you have some sort of a you're in your affiliation with Chick-fil-A that you minister to other Chick-fil-A owners, managers, franchise holders.
Yeah.
How does that work? What do you do there?
Yeah, I'm the state chaplain for Chick-fil-A, which means whenever we gather as a group, I'm the one that's praying for the group, or when we meet together, I actually have about 30 minutes. I cut that down to 15, 20. I don't want to take too much time. When we're together as a group, which we meet twice every other month, we're usually there all day. So we try to get out as early as we can. So I'll cut my part back. But basically, I'm teaching Christian principles. I might give a little sermonette through a couple of scripture. I went through Romans a couple times the last time we met and talked about faith and what's it mean to be a true Christian. And so basically I'll take a Christian principle, pull it out, do some exposition on it, pull it out, what the true meaning, what it meant then, what's it mean today, or God's overall meaning and what it means to us today. Then I'll parallel it with Chick-fil-A. So I'm the state chaplain with that. Anybody has any issues, they can call me up, any Chick-fil-A people. But most of those Chick-fil-A team members at other stores are going to talk to their operator, because their operators are well-versed as well.
Now, I noticed that when I walked out the door of the Chick-fil-A's that I've been in, the mission statement is right there in plain sight, framed, hanging very prominently by the door for
yes.
everybody to read.
Right.
I know we've been talking a lot about Chick-fil-A and what they do, but why don't we kind of go through that mission statement a little bit and give us a thumbnail sketch of that mission statement.
Yeah, to be faithful stewards.
Right.
Yeah, again, it's coming back to the perspective. You know, one of the problems, let me throw something out there. I found that people deny Christ for basically three reasons. And number one is lack of knowledge. They just don't know. They haven't studied. They haven't researched. They haven't. It's just, I don't believe or I don't feel that a loving God could blah, 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 fill in the blank. Well, what research? You know, they're smart people. What research have they truly done or investigated to see if there's any truth behind what we're proclaiming? Number two is pride and arrogance. People are proud from what they've done. I've gotten here on my own. I've done it all. I've created my fortune. And the third one is sin. You know, people are going to deny Christ if they're heavily involved in some sort of wrongful act, because proclaiming Christ would mean they'd have to give it up, and they don't necessarily want to. Take that for whatever it's worth. But coming back to the pride, C.S. Lewis has an awesome, awesome comment on pride, which I don't remember at this time, but it's just awesome.
But it's really good.
It's really good.
Kind of humbling, though, not to remember it.
Yeah, right. yeah, touche. Anyway, so, but coming back to it, you know, it's all a matter of perspective. It's like maybe when you were younger, if you asked to borrow a car from somebody, and, you know, you knew that was their pride and joy. They loved that car. They took care of it. They washed it every day, and they finally said yes. You didn't just go out there and trash it and, you know, go four-wheeling in the desert and come back with all sort of garbage inside and empty gas tank and all dinged up. Say, here you go. You know, sometimes that's how we treat our life, right? We've been given this precious life. We've been given precious family and friends. And a lot of times we abuse that. No, you take that and you're like, okay. And you, when you bring it back, sometimes you've washed it. You've filled the tank up. You make sure it's immaculate. You're so careful. If you've got other people in the car, you're always, hey, take it easy. It's not mine. It's borrowed. I've got to take care of this thing. So when I give it back, they know I'm worthy of being allowed to have borrowed it. And so that's us as well, that we're worthy. Let me throw out one of the scriptures that I live by is Proverbs 22:1. A good name is better to be had than great riches. Even though Truett Cathy said profit is number one in our business, and it is, it is. But money has never, ever, ever been a driver for me. And I've been very successful in business, immensely successful in business. Money has never been my number one goal, never, ever, ever. It's doing the best job. It's giving everything I can, doing it right, doing it smart, surrounding myself with the right people, promoting those people beyond myself most of the time. And so,
well, that's whether you attribute it to your faith and your belief structure and your faith and so on and so forth or not. The fact is that the most successful people have that outlook that the money will come if I do A,
exactly.
B, C, D, and E right, above board, in honesty and in integrity. The rest will follow because people will want to do business with me.
Yes.
Because they know they're going to get a square deal.
Yes.
and a fair shake with me. And that is one of the tenets of a successful businessman, whether it's a faith-based or not. It doesn't.
Right.
In my opinion, it doesn't much matter. And I've said, and I don't know if I've told you this. I remember when you and I played golf those many years ago. You can tell more about a person in 4 hours of golf, as an example, than you can after doing business with them for maybe months and months and months.
True.
Because they're going to give themselves up.
Right.
I mean, one way or another, they're going to give themselves up.
By the way, Pete, that was the best game I ever played in my life that
yeah.
day. It was. It was.
It wasn't doing anything I did, I tell you. But the point here is there's the right way and then there's the other way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And whether it's faith instilled, whether it's personally instilled, I'm in the process of putting the finishing touches on a book that I'm writing. And one of the things in the book is the foreword that I'm writing, and it's basically a tribute to my father, who's passed away. But he gave me something that in Scandinavian jargon and Finnish in particular is one word. It's called sisu, S-I-S-U. It doesn't have a literal translation. It's stamina, fortitude, honesty, fairness. It's all of that in one word, sisu. And if you have sisu, chances are you're going to be a pretty good business person, a pretty good person. He was not a particularly devout man himself,
right.
But he lived right,
right.
You know,
right.
And it was go to work, always be on time, even when you're not feeling well. Give him a good, honest day's work. Take your paycheck willingly and proudly because you know you earned it, and bring it home to your family and never lie and pay your bills. That was his credo. That was sisu. And it sounds as though it fits right
That's
in.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And I come back to Proverbs 22:1 again. A good name is better be had than great riches. And what do others think of you, right, when they say your name? Pete, awesome guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If Pete told you, then you could count on it. Mm-hmm. Or is it Pete?
I know what that guy.
Right. And so that's it. And it's not doing those efforts to be proud of who I am. Again, I'm just a mirror of Christ. I glorify the Lord by being his servant and doing those deeds that I love to do for him. But coming back to it, those principles, those tenets transcend so much. Yes, honesty and integrity. It's not having an entitlement mindset like so many people have nowadays. I showed up. Give me my paycheck. Give me a raise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, John and I had this discussion with was it Jason Arndt?
Yeah,
that's
right.
And it had to do with it had to do with a lot of those same types of things as far as being forthright and honest and sincere and so on and so forth. And the fact that the discussion went along the lines of the church has to be run more like a business nowadays. And you talked about the entrepreneurship of the church, and you talked about closing the deal and making the sale, but it all had to be done in integrity and so on and so forth so that you could bring more flock to the church. Because as the two of you were saying, your percentage of the market is dwindling.
It is dwindling, yeah.
And
yeah.
But I mean, that's I think that's all kind of playing around and orbiting around some of these same thoughts.
Yeah, and it's the same kind of approach. The goal is not to fill up your building,
right,
or anything like that. It is to do the ministry Excellently.
So people will want to come to your building.
Yes, they'll be thirsty for what it is. They'll need what goes on when they gather together because of what they've received otherwise and outside of that.
Yeah. And that's why people want to come to Chick-fil-A. And that's and that's why I hope people want to come and do business with us in the things that we do. It's the same principle, and we're coming at it in many respects from somewhat different angles. The three of us, as we sit here, the two of you probably much more faith based than myself, but the principle is still the same.
It is.
It doesn't matter.
I agree.
So yeah. I mean, it's
You know, it's interesting coming back. Something John just touched on, and something you asked me earlier, Pete, about how do you deal with other people in the community that don't have your same beliefs? Well, my goal, my job is not to convert others to Christianity. As crazy as that sounds, it's not up to me to save people. It's not. It's up to me to mirror Christ, shine his glory and his love, and just walk the walk that he had. And what I mean by that is demonstrate Christ's love. It's up to the Holy Spirit to save lives, to change lives. It's just me to be the mouthpiece of speaking whatever I need to say. But if the pressure is on me to convert somebody, that's insanity.
That's right.
You know, I don't speak so eloquently at times, and you know, I might get a little frustrated. So thank the Lord, it's not up to me to save lives.
Right.
It's up to His Holy Spirit.
And it's a motive to manipulation instead of to love and serve.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
So I just share the gospel, and you know, if the Holy Spirit leads in that way, hallelujah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you, this has been a pretty fast hour, John.
It has been.
It usually is when we get into these topics.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then when we have a guest like this sitting across the table from us, that makes it even easier.
Great time.
Because Dave is good.
He is good.
He knows his stuff.
You're too kind.
Well, we want to thank everybody for listening. And Dave, thank you for being with us today. It's been a pleasure having you here. And we'll talk a little bit more after about what you're going to be able to do with this broadcast if you choose to do it. So it'll be there for your use if you want it.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today, everybody, as you've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, Exploring Faith with John Mayer and Pete Peters, and our special guest today, Mr. David McGrew of Chick-fil-A and Surprise. We always try to bring good conversation to the world, and I think we accomplished that today. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. We check us out on boomerandthebabe.com. That's www.boomerandthebabe.com. See everything we want you to see about us and the books we publish and the products that we produce for businesses, and hopefully to help businesses be a little bit more successful, especially in these trying times. So be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Stay tuned. In an hour from now, we're going to have our new host, Eileen Proctor, with Fervently Speaking, all about pets. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you at the next Boomer the Babe Show. Have a great day. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.